Teachers Association versus Court. Justice Kelch is recused from this matter. He is also recused from the last case of the day. And Mr. Walker, good morning to you. Let's give everybody a second to get in and out of the courtroom. And you may proceed.
Thank you. May it please the court. My name is John Walker, and I'm here today on behalf of the appellants, Duane and Catherine Court, who are present in the courtroom today. The issue before the court is whether the board of a homeowners association, via a lawsuit funded in part by a member of that board, can dictate or control paint color via covenants that nowhere mention paint, paint color, exterior color, or anything along those lines. Because this was a case involving the breach of a restrictive covenant or alleged breach, it's tried de novo on the record. I want to give some brief factual background just to set the stage here. The courts purchased their lot. It was an unimproved lot with no house on it back in May of 2004. They built their house and moved in January of 2005. There were some discussions between the developer and the courts about what color the house would be. The courts eventually decided to paint the house tan. 9 or 10 years later, their neighbors painting the house. The court
did they decide to paint the house tan, or were they told they couldn't paint the house blue?
They were told they could not paint their house blue, and that's important for a couple of reasons. First, when they repainted their house blue in May of 2015, it was a different blue than the blue they had proposed to the developer when they were first building their house. But more importantly, in Nebraska, restrictive covenants are disfavored under the law. And because they're disfavored, you cannot extend them by mere implication, which is really what I think your question is getting at, is, well, if they were told they couldn't paint their house blue, why could they paint it sometime later? If the covenants don't restrict paint color, then the fact that the courts decided not to paint their house blue or were told not to paint their house blue doesn't somehow magically mean that they are forever barred from painting their house blue if that's not what's in the covenants. And so, looking at the plain language of the covenants, and that's really my first argument, is the district court's error in how it interpreted the covenants. You don't have to get past the plain language of the covenants themselves. So if you start with Article 1, Section 2...
Well, you're anticipating my question, but just to be sure, are you arguing that there is no ambiguity in the covenants?
Well...
And that one is a yes or no
I'm
question.
I'm going to argue in the alternative.
You want to argue both, I understand.
Right.
But you are at least starting with the proposition that there is no ambiguity.
You can look at the plain language of these covenants and go no further than the fact that they don't mention paint color. And if they don't mention paint color, how is a homeowner looking, or a prospective home buyer...
Do they mention improvements?
They do, and they define improvements. And how do they define improvements? They define improvements as things such as residence, patio, driveway, pool, doghouse, treehouse. And under the doctrine of adjustum generis, if you have a very specific list, like we do there, followed by a general phrase, and that general phrase is or other external improvement, it's a simple analysis of which one of these is not like the other. So on the one hand, you have color, paint. And on the other hand, you have these physical structures, house, patio, driveway, doghouse, treehouse. Obviously, color is nothing like patio, pool, doghouse, treehouse, things of that nature. And that's really what, and we've cited the case, the Gretna Stone case, held. And that's the definition of improvement that applies, the definition contained within the covenants. That's the definition that applies, that's the definition that controls. And so if paint is not included, if color is not included in that definition, then the courts don't have to seek approval for painting their house blue. It does warrant mentioning that before they painted their house blue, Mr. Korth, who's a member of the board, sent an email to another member of the board saying, hey, I'm thinking of painting my house blue. I don't see anything in the covenants that restricts it. And the response wasn't, well, hold on, you've got to get approval. Or hold on, you can't paint your house blue. The response was, hey, you picked a good painter, the weather's looking nice, go get him. And then about 2.5 months later, Wayne's, Mr. Korth, still a member of the board, is on an email with 5 members of the board, and the question posed in that email was, are there any restrictions on paint color? And again, the response wasn't, yes, there absolutely are restrictions. The response was, no. So it shouldn't come as a surprise then when a couple weeks later, the board tried to take some steps to amend the covenants to specifically give them the power to approve or disapprove paint color.
But it's not the party's interpretation of the covenants that determine whether they're ambiguous. It simply is a matter of law.
Absolutely. And so what happened at trial was we had a parade of witnesses that turned this into a popularity contest where all these witnesses come up and say, well, this is a nuisance or this is an annoyance or it's obnoxious to the eye, which was completely unnecessary because that's a matter of law. You can rule that for all of these covenants, when they fail to mention paint or paint color, it simply doesn't allow the board or the board of the HOA to control paint color.
You would agree with me, I hope at least, that when something new is to be placed on a lot, something new like a residence building, fence, wall, etc., that required the developer's approval. That's what the covenant says, right?
Pursuant to Article 1, Section 2, yes.
And one of the verbs used in that, the verbs specifically, none of these shall be constructed, erected, placed, or permitted to remain, right?
Correct.
Suppose you have, with this covenant, you have someone who takes the garage, removes the garage from their house, tears that part of it down. Is that without the developer's, now homeowners association's, approval? Would that be a breach of the covenant?
Well, I know there's another specific covenant that deals with garages, and I believe it says you have to have at least 2 garages and it has to be a side load garage.
We'll turn it into a sunroom.
So your question is, if they tear out a sunroom,
if they tear down the sunroom,
approval?
Does that require developer approval?
It doesn't, in my mind, fall under the rubric of constructed, erected, placed, or permitted to remain on. And I would note that if you look at Article 1, Section 12.
So once they've approved placing an improvement on there, the way you read this is removal of it, changes of it, are not controlled at all.
Well, I think...
Unless there's something...
Yeah, I think, respectfully, you changed the equation a little bit by adding that word change. So, for example, if they took a sunroom and wanted to build onto that sunroom, I think that would fall under Article 1, Section 2.
So it's got to get larger.
That would be one way for the...
That's your interpretation of the covenant. It's either got to be something new or something's got to be changed getting larger. Can't be changed getting smaller. It can't be changed in the way it looks.
I could probably find a way where it could get smaller and it would require approval. If you tore down a house and built a smaller house.
So somebody's got a single front door in the way I would think of a single front door, and now they want to change it and put a double door like we have in the back of the courtroom here. Is that an improvement that requires developer, now homeowner, approval under the covenants?
It could be.
So why is paint different?
Because paint's not listed under Article 1, Section 2.
But neither is the double door.
But the double door would, under justum generis, be more similar to, you know, an actual physical three-dimensional object as opposed to the attribute or color. And that's kind of what the Gretna Stone case said, was he had a pink house. We have a covenant that's substantially similar to Article 1, Section 2, except it's more restrictive because it says a homeowner has to ask for approval for the exterior quality, type, and color of the exterior. And the Gretna Stone case said, you should have put paint, because that's all they had to do. That's all they had to do was add paint or color. And then we wouldn't be having this conversation, but they didn't. And in Gretna Stone, they didn't. And the Court of Appeal said, you can't add this word to this definition by mere implication. And that's what the appellee is arguing. That's what really the district court did, is extended this by implication, by adding paint or paint color to Article 1, Section 2.
Does this flow from covenants are disfavored, that you would not be expanding?
Absolutely. And I'm almost out of time. I would like to reserve a little bit of time for rebuttal, but you cannot extend them by implication under Nebraska law because they're disfavored. I'm almost out of time, but we'd ask that the ruling of the district court be reversed. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Foreman, good morning to you.
Good morning, Your Honor.
Can you put that in a position that your opposing client can see what's going to be on it?
Opposing counsel.
Excuse me, opposing counsel, yes. Yeah, why don't you put it over there?
And may I move freely? Get
you may. Certainly you may use it. Or you may move it, I guess.
It's not in the way if you're worried about, we can see no, through it if that was your concern.
Today, so I didn't
leave no, you might not be able to.
Chief Justice, members of the court, Larry Foreman on behalf of the appellee and the Prairie Ridge Home Association. This is a case involving the willful and deliberate violation of three provisions of the Declaration of Covenants with respect to the Prairie Ridge subdivision.
I thought you cited four provisions.
I think that was a misstatement, Judge. They're basically three.
All right.
Thank you. Basically, in this case, the defendants, who, by the way, were fully aware of the content of that declaration, where they bought a piece of property in the subdivision, put a house on it shortly thereafter, then approached the developer declarant in the spring of 2005 for permission to paint that house a bright shade of blue.
They hadn't built the house yet, right?
No, the house was built, Your Honor. But the
well, wasn't
it
finished.
Was built in the winter, and so there yeah. was no paint put on it. So the paint issue was left to be decided in the spring.
It was still part of the original construction.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yes, so anyway, they come in, they approach the developer for consent to paint this thing bright shade of blue. That request is rejected, so they come back, they do an earth tone shade of brown, painted it brown, lived with that for 10 years.
Do we have any evidence in the record that compares the shades of blue? We have evidence in the bill, the testimony that they were different shades.
And the only thing I could tell you, Your Honor, it seems like they were very close, but perhaps not exactly the same. But this is the testimony. I mean, I think there was testimony from the forest that it was a different color. I think the testimony from the declarant, Mr. Huber, was virtually the same. The bright blue color that was clearly in contrast to the earth tone colors used in the rest of the
subdivision. Okay.
Does that answer your question?
Well, we don't know. We have pictures in the record of the current color. We don't have any pictures of the original color.
Correct.
Right.
I believe that's a fair statement.
Okay.
Okay, so basically, what bothers us is that in doing what they did, when they come in 10 years later and they repaint the thing, basically the color that had been rejected, was they show total disregard for the covenants, but more importantly, they show total disregard for the feelings and views of all the other people who had bought property in that subdivision in reliance on the declaration, which talks in terms of the maintaining the atmosphere and the comfort
of the... Are the feelings of the other residents relevant?
We believe they are, Your Honor, because these people, and they testified that they acted in reliance on the content of the covenants in buying property in that subdivision.
Are you arguing that the feelings are relevant because the covenants are ambiguous?
No, sir. We don't think they're ambiguous at all.
Well, then...
But we're saying that when people look at the covenants, they feel they're not ambiguous. In reliance on what those covenants say, they buy property, they move in, and, you know, if there had been any ambiguity, I think they might have been asking the declarant at the time, well, what does this mean?
The interpretation of unambiguous covenants is a matter of law, isn't it?
Well, we think that these covenants are clear as a bell.
Okay.
Because they give total authority to the declarant.
I'll try again. The meaning of unambiguous covenants is a question of law, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
So the factual presentation about what neighbors think doesn't have anything to do with that, does it?
Well, but it does, Your Honor, if you look at the fact that when you're talking about putting it in context, okay, and looking at, okay, who did what in reliance on what? Because if the covenants just, you know, didn't address some of these issues, if they didn't talk in terms of making sure that you didn't have something that was obnoxious to the eye, or something that was a nuisance or an annoyance, you know, then you'd be talking to something different. But we
okay.
think in this case...
You're talking about now the language of a covenant that I have a question for you about, but before we get to that one, I want to ask you about Section 2. What language in Section 2, I mean, word color is not used in Section 2. I think
that's correct.
That's a fair place to start.
That's correct.
The word color isn't used. And in the words, the verbs that were used about improvements, constructed, erected, placed, or permitted to remain. All of those things were accomplished when they built the house, right?
Except color, which was on the spec sheet. Spec sheet was in the exhibit, it was exhibit 52, I believe. And that was not addressed because they built the house in the winter. And so it was reserved until the spring when they would be able to address the issue of color. And at that point, they came back in acknowledging that the declarant had the authority. Came back in, they said, okay, we want to paint the house this bright shade of blue. The declarant, in accordance with its retained powers under the Declaration, said you can't paint it blue.
Well, is the word color used as a verb in Section 2?
No, but if you look at the wording that's used and you realize that external appearance is what is covered by these...
External improvement, not appearance.
Well, but appearance is really what you're getting to. I mean, it's what you perceive when you're driving down the street. So, yeah, it's an external improvement because they can do whatever they want inside the house. But, yeah, so it's the improvement. They recognized that they had to get declarant approval for that color. That color was rejected, so they went ahead with the alternative color and lived with that for 10 years, and then without authority from anybody, went ahead and repainted and color that was at least very similar to what had been rejected
in 10 years. In your view, is color a capital improvement?
I believe it is, because they've admitted that it's a costly improvement. This is not something where you just go out and spend a few dollars. They admitted that it cost at least $2,000, and we think it costs a lot more than that, because we offered to repaint the house.
Is your view capital improvement is a function of how much it costs?
Well, it's...
From a tax standpoint.
It is an issue in terms of, you've got the expense that you go to is a factor in looking at whether the thing needs to be removed.
If they had repainted their house an earth tone color, would you have said they violated the covenants by not requesting permission before repainting?
We would have, but depending on the color, we might not have made an issue. But when you've got this thing, let me show you this before I run out of time. because this is the blue color that we're concerned about, and it is totally incompatible with all the earth tone colors that are in that subdivision right now. Totally different from all of them, drastically. So that's why we've come to all of this, why we're concerned about what they're trying to do.
And those are photos from one of the exhibits.
Yes, sir. These are part of 49.
So is the word improvement the key word here?
Yes. Yes, and we believe that this court recognized exterior to be an improvement in both the Kalkowski versus Nebraska National Trails case, as well as Tyler versus Tyler. And this color was never approved by the declarant. In addition, the house is obviously an improvement. It does have to have a color on it that would be an integral part of that.
I took you back to Section 2. I don't want to let you have to sit down without talking about Section 16, which has the obnoxious to the eye language in it. But my question for you about that provision is that it says no lot shall be used in whole or in part for the storage of any property or thing that will cause the land to appear in an unclean or untidy condition, comma, or that will be obnoxious to the eye.
Right.
Isn't your reading of that, in effect, reading out of the covenant the phrase for the storage of any property or thing? Aren't you, in essence, trying to read it, no lot shall be used in whole or in part that will cause the land to be obnoxious to the eye?
Don't believe so, Your Honor, because if you look at a dwelling being placed on that property, that dwelling is being stored on that ground.
I guess I'm asking you a question of grammar. I'm not really asking you a question about what it looks like.
Right.
Grammatically, isn't your argument reading out that phrase?
Well, I guess what I would suggest, Your Honor, is that if you look at 15 and 16, 15 you're talking about something that becomes a nuisance or annoyance. And everybody who bought property out there agreed, you know, that this stuff was, this color was a nuisance and annoyance. They agreed that it was obnoxious. And it seems to me relevant that Judge Thompson looked at those people. He said their testimony is credible, it's believable. On the other hand, he looked at the fourth testimony, felt that they were totally inconsistent, so he didn't feel he could believe them. So he opted to go with our people. That's why one of the reasons that he ruled in the way in which he did.
Thank you.
Might the homeowners be offended if you told them their homes were storage units?
At this point, Your Honor, I think they would not care what they were told as long as they were able to prevail and didn't have to continue to look at this dwelling with the color that it has right now, a color that they think is offensive, inconsistent with everything else in the entire rustic subdivision. I believe my time is up, so thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal?
Got 7 seconds.
I think I
should
get something in 7 seconds.
Well, this will be.
If I may.
You may.
Thank you. I'm going to quote the Annis case with Miller Lerman, Justice Miller Lerman, you were on. If what can be done is only determined by what has been done as revealed on a videotape or here photographed, then individuality and creativity suffer. Thank you. We ask for support here.
Thank you very much. On we go then to the next case of the day.